business and the latest information. This is a Bloomberg Radio Business Flash.
From Bloomberg World Headquarters in New York with the closing bell, I'm Greg Jarrett. Encouraging signals from central bankers helped stocks in trading today, propelling the Standard & Poor's Index above 2,000 for the first time. Investors cheered comments from central bankers that suggested continued support for the economy. We check the markets every 15 minutes here on Bloomberg Radio. And at the bell, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up nearly one-half of 1% at 17,079. That is up 78 points. The S&P 500 is up over 10 points, one-half of 1%. The S&P 500 is at 1,998 after, as we say, briefly going over 2,000 a couple of times today. The NASDAQ is at 4,557, up nearly 19 points, or four-tenths of 1%. The 10-year is up 4 3/4, 30 seconds, with a yield of 2.39%. The yen is trading at 103.99, while the euro trades at 131.94. COMEX Gold is down $2.60. That is down two-tenths of 1% at $1,276.70 per ounce in crude oil. Is down 23 cents. That is one-quarter of 1%, trading at $93.41 per barrel. New home sales dropped in July. Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice has that story from the First Word Desk.
The Commerce Department reports sales of new single-family homes dropped 2.4% last month to 412,000 at an annual rate. That's the second straight decline. Economists say it's probably not as bad as it looks, as new home sales account for just 10% of residential property market transactions. Sales of previously owned homes, which account for 90% of the market, rose in July, more than offsetting the drop in new home sales. At the Bloomberg First Word Desk, I'm Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Radio.
Thank you, Vinny. Again, the S&P is up over one-half of 1%, while the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up just about one-half of 1%, and the NASDAQ is up four-tenths of 1%. The time is now 4:02. Let's go around the world in 60 seconds. June Grosso is standing by at the Bloomberg News Desk.
Thank you, Greg. Michael Brown, the unarmed black teenager killed by a white policeman 16 days ago, was laid to rest as a civil rights leader Al Sharpton urged the thousands who gathered to channel their anger into activism. Today's funeral comes after more than 2 weeks of protest over Brown's death, which include violent clashes between demonstrators and police in riot gear. A grand jury is hearing evidence in the case and will decide whether Darren Wilson, the officer who shot Brown, should face criminal charges. Attorneys for Texas Governor Rick Perry are asking a judge to dismiss criminal charges alleging that the possible 2016 presidential candidate abused his power with a veto last summer. Perry's attorneys filed the motion today in district court in Austin. They say the law being used to prosecute Perry is unconstitutionally vague. A nearly flawless copy of Superman's comic book debut has sold for a super-powered price of $3.2 million. New York comic dealer Stephen Fisher and Vincent Zerzolo said today they submitted Sunday's record-setting bid in the eBay auction. For more on these stories 24 hours a day, go to Bloomberg.com or download the Bloomberg Radio Plus mobile app. Greg?
Thank you, June. 7:10 tonight, Yankees at Kansas City to face the Royals. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. I'm Greg Jarrett. Now back to Pim and Carol with Taking Stock.
I'm a loser.
Don't be a sore loser.
I'm winning. See that? That's the kind of winning attitude that's going to take this enterprise straight to the top.
I guess you're the winner by default.
The winner takes it all. The loser has to fall.
Losers always whine about their best.
Bloomberg Taking Stock. Winners and losers. With Pim Fox and Carol Masser on Bloomberg Radio.
It is time for the day's winners and losers on this Monday, August 25th, 2014. I'm Carol Masser, my co-host Pim Fox. Taking stock of the S&P 500, 379 names in the index higher for the Monday session, 119 lower, 4 unchanged. Let's talk about shares of Ann Taylor, Ann Inc., I should say. Ticker is ANN. Stock up 6.5% to $39.94 a share. The owner of women's clothing retailer Ann Taylor and Loft is the latest target of activist investors. Investment funds Engine Capital and Red Alder are urging the company to sell itself, saying it could fetch as much as $2.5 billion. Now, failing a sale, the fund said the company's board should buy back stock as a, quote, sign of confidence. So, again, that stock up him 6.5% to $39.94 a share.
Let me tell you about the shares of JCPenney. Moving higher today by nearly 6%. No specific news from the company, but J.P. Morgan's analyst Matthew Boss and the team at J.P. Morgan thinking that JCPenney could keep gaining into the end of the year. Now, the analyst day is scheduled for October the 8th, and the analysis that J.P. Morgan did for the cash flow at JCPenney depends on the continuing closure of underperforming stores. They make the case that the cash savings from shuttering another 100 stores could be used to pay down near-term debt of about $200 million. There are about $400 million in debt maturities through the 2016 fiscal year. The company has not said anything specific about additional store closings, but in the previous earnings release, the company did detail the ongoing effort to increase cash flow, and they did say that they would have positive cash flow for the year. Currently, the company says that they have about, I think it's 1,060 stores, and they closed 33 stores this year. And right now, the shares of JCPenney, JCP, they were up 5.5% of 49 cents to $10.69. They're also, maybe this is the reason the stock moved higher, is because of the report that JCPenney is offering $10 haircuts for children.
They do that. Yeah, they do that around this time of year. All right, so JCPenney higher, also your best group in the S&P 500 today, among those 10 major groups are the S&P financials. And let me throw out a few names for you, because Goldman Sachs was up about 1.5%. BlackRock was up 2%. Lincoln National was up 1.6%. Morgan Stanley up more than 2%. Well, this may have had something possibly to do with it. Financial stocks worth overweighting, given that they will continue to improve relative to the S&P 500 and many financials no longer at risk of falling further. This, according to Stern AG technical analyst Carter Worth. He said this in a note. Worth had previously seen financials as underperformers. He writes, while there's very slight improvement in financials relative to the S&P 500, it is enough to, quote, suggest that better days lie ahead. So he says those financials setting up for breakout type moves include Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, BlackRock, and PIM, Lincoln National Corporation.
And shares, I'll tell you about the shares of Best Buy because, of course, the second quarter results, we await them as we speak. Shares of Best Buy move higher today by 73 cents, 31.93. That's an increase of 2.25%. We're going to be looking at the gross margins of Best Buy because they're going to be releasing their results. There's a conference. They're going to report, I beg your pardon, tomorrow, 7 a.m. The call is at 8 a.m. tomorrow. Average analyst estimate looking for 31 cents a share for the second quarter. Revenue of nearly $9 billion. And everyone's looking for comp store sales to decrease about 2.2%. But once again, margins are going to be the key thing. Estimated margins are about 23%. And we'll have to take a look at what's selling at Best Buy, maybe tablet sales. That doesn't seem to be doing very well. We'll have to get a check on that tomorrow. Once again, shares at Best Buy up 2.5% today.
All right, that's a look at some of the day's winners and losers on this Monday, August 25th. This portion of Bloomberg Taking Stock brought to you by Sector Spider ETFs. Time to consider a stock alternative. Visit SectorSPDRS.com or call 1-866-SECTOR-ETF.
All right, Dave, you're up.
Hi, my name is Dave.
Wilson, where are you? Wilson!
Just what do you think you're doing, Dave?
We're going for a price on Wilson.
Open up the door, it's Dave!
Who?
Dave!
Hey, Mr. Wilson!
Time to bring back Bloomberg Stocks columnist Dave Wilson with his stock of the day. And it looks like investors not too hungry for shares of Grubhub today.
Well, actually, they are pretty hungry for the company, Carol. And that's sort of the interesting piece of the puzzle. You know, ask yourself, did you ever wonder why newly public companies would let their shares surge on the first day of trading? You know, Grubhub, the food ordering company, you look at that one and maybe get an answer. Company made its initial public offering at $26 a share on April 3rd, and it trades under the ticker Grub. Surprise, surprise. The stock climbed 31% in its market debut, and 2 weeks ago reached a record of $45.80. The performance spurred Grubhub and its private equity backers to file today for a follow-up stock sale, or follow-on if you prefer. They will sell a total of 10 million shares, up from 7.4 million in the IPO. Only 1.25 million shares will be new. Most of the others belong to funds run by Spectrum Equity, Goldman Sachs, Warburg Pincus, and three other firms. Company executives are selling some of their shares as well. The more lucrative sale amounts to a 14% stake in Grubhub and will double the float or shares available for trading. That means a bigger supply of stock.
Share dilution.
Yes, exactly. I mean, in the sense that there's more out there for trading, demand doesn't rise enough to catch that, and Grubhub is down 8.4% today.
Dave Wilson, what's the best way to measure the performance of Grubhub?
Well, that's an interesting question. What would you suggest, Pim?
Well, I'm just wondering, like things like free cash flow, for example, or, I mean, you got a company that is trying to expand its business. They're making the combination between Seamless and Grubhub supposedly seamless, but yet they operate as two separate companies. I'm wondering, what is the best metric for an online ordering company?
Well, in this case, because it's a relatively new business, even with, as you mentioned, putting the two outfits together, I mean, you got revenue growth that's through the roof. I mean, in the sense that you look at the second quarter, it was more than double the year ago. And some of that is part of, you know, tied into the deal. That said, it really does show that it's something that's catching on with people. It's a matter of how big the business can get. So they're really in growth mode at this point.
I want to thank you very much, Bloomberg Stocks columnist Dave Wilson. You're listening to Taking Stock. I'm Pim Fox. You can follow me on Twitter at Pim Fox.
And me at Carol Masser.
Here we go. You're listening to Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio.
This portion of Bloomberg Taking Stock, it is brought to you by Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Access global flow with speed, certainty, and ease. Foreign exchange execution fine-tuned to your objectives. That's FX Amplified. That's Bank of America Merrill Lynch.
Coming up on Taking Stock, headphones. Yes, headphones make headlines. The market for headphones grew about 20% last year. Apple, of course, it paid $3 billion to acquire Beats. We'll introduce you to a New York City startup that's looking to make some noise in the luxury headphone market. We're going to talk to the chief executive of Master and Dynamic. All right, he's got his headphones on. He's in the Bloomberg newsroom. Greg Jarrett has got a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I have them turned up loud so I can hear you. This Bloomberg Business Flash is brought to you by PowerShares QQQ. Visit PowerShares.com for up-to-the-minute ETF holdings, pricing, and trading information. Invesco PowerShares, leading the intelligent ETF revolution. China Bank, the country's biggest developer, has teamed up with Alibaba Group Holding after they offered discounts of as much as $325,000 to home buyers who also shop on that e-commerce company, Taobao Marketplace. William Peabody, venture partner at Greycroft Partners, says this is all part of Alibaba's recipe for success.
The key indicator of success is a visionary founder coupled with a great operator. And when those two people find each other, it's always worth taking the risk on the company and for the two of them to take the risk on each other. It's a recipe for success.
The S&P briefly topped 2,000 for the first time as stocks rallied on deals, speculation, and prospects for increased European stimulus. The dollar climbed to an 11-month high, and German 2-year note yields dropped below zero. We check the markets every 15 minutes on Bloomberg Radio. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed up 0.4%, or up 75 points at 17,076. The S&P 500 closed at 1,997. That's up 9.5 points, or nearly 0.5%. And the NASDAQ closed at 4,557. That's up 18 points, or 0.4%. The 10-year of 5.75/32 with a yield of 2.38%. The yen at 104.02. The euro at 131.95. COMEX gold down 3.20. Down 0.25% at 1,276.10 per ounce. Crude oil in New York down 24 cents. That is over 0.25%, trading at $93.41 per barrel. Apple at $101.54, up 22 cents. That is up over 0.2%. And checking Berkshire Hathaway B stock at $136.23. That's up 48 cents or 0.3%. Time to go around the world in 60 seconds in the Bloomberg Newsroom. June Grasso.
Thank you, Greg. This news update is brought to you by your Tri-State Cadillac dealers. Now, during the Cadillac Summer's Best event, lease a Cadillac ATS for $299 a month. Visit CadillacTriState.com today. More Israelis today are leaving their homes along the border with the Gaza Strip. In all, tens of thousands of Israelis have fled those homes amid growing fear and frustration over the war with Hamas and the Palestinian mortar fire that is raining down on their communities. With the school year approaching, the Israeli government today started offering assistance to those residents in the first large-scale voluntary evacuation in nearly 8 weeks of fighting. Organized labor and pro-business groups are waging an intense lobbying campaign directed at Michigan teachers who are deciding whether to remain in their union. The teachers' decisions will be the first big test of the state's new right-to-work law. Many of the 112,000 school employees in the Michigan Education Association can now leave the union and stop paying fees under the law that took effect last year. The deadline for deciding is Sunday. For more on these stories, 24 hours a day, go to Bloomberg.com or download the Bloomberg Radio Plus mobile app. Greg?
Thank you, June. Emmy ad revenue is projected to top $33.8 million. We have analysis coming up at 4:40 to 5:40 from Paul Sweeney, Bloomberg Intelligence Media Analyst. That'll be on Taking Stock. I'm Greg Jarrett. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now back to Pim and Carol.
Greg Jarrett, thank you so much. You are listening to Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio. Check out Bloomberg View, offering listeners a hand-picked collection of authoritative, influential, and provocative voices on topics ranging from finance, business, and economics to politics, culture, and sports. Don't let the news confuse you any longer. Bloomberg View on radio, the Bloomberg Terminal, all of your mobile devices, and at BloombergView.com. This is Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, you really only want to know the best, that's for sure. Claudio Fernandez Arauz is a partner at Egon Zehnder International. He is the author of the book, It's Not the How or the What, but the Who, Surrounding Yourself with the Best, and he joins us from Buenos Aires. Claudio Fernandez Arauz, great to have you with us here on Bloomberg.
Same here, Payne. A pleasure speaking with you and Carol.
Give us the details of this particular book.
Well, I wrote this book to try to help everyone succeed by surrounding ourselves with the best. And basically, my conviction after 3 decades as an executive search consultant working across 42 countries in the world for our firm, Egon Zehnder, is that those who master the ability to surround themselves with the best and help the best become even better each day achieve the highest success in business and largely in any social role, from all the way from country presidents to even the Pope leading the church. So that's the basic of the book, and in the book I emphasize a lot the fact that we are living a new era of people decisions, where in the past we used to place most of our focus on experience, on IQ, even on competencies, and I am convinced for a series of reasons, and I can expand on that, that now we should be placing much more focus on the potential that people have to learn and change and be able to perform at a very high level in more complex jobs about which we don't have a clue today.
You're going to be a guest speaker at the World Business Forum in New York City this coming October. So when you lay this out, are there like 3 or 4 basic points that you want to stress in terms of finding the best people, surrounding yourself with the best people?
Yes, Carol. If I had to emphasize a couple of points, as you asked. The first one is that we are obviously living this world, which has become so much volatile, unpredictable, complex, and ambiguous, as everybody knows. And in this new world, what got you here, if you are, say, a successful manager, won't even allow you to stay here if you don't have the flexibility, the adaptability, the ability to constantly change and learn and grow. So that's one key reality. If you look, for example, at the tenure of CEOs, mm-hmm. 20 years ago, it was 15 years. Now it's only 5 years. So the first message is that the world has become so unpredictable that if we want to remain as successful managers or leaders, it's not enough to have the right competencies today, because the competencies in the future may be different. We need to have this ability to fundamentally grow and learn, which is what I label potential. The second key message, in a minute I can come back to how you can determine whether someone has potential and what to do to develop it. The second message is that I travel across 42 different countries at least every other year, and I am convinced that in this coming decade there will be a huge shortage of talent for three reasons, which I've labeled the other GDP. This is not for gross domestic product, it's for the combination of globalization, demographics, and pipelines. Each of these forces, and again, I can expand if you want, will basically generate a larger demand over a limited pool of talent. Globalization, because companies from developed markets want to expand in the most attractive emerging markets where there is not enough talent, but also the other way around. These new giants from the emerging economies are going globally. If you look at the Fortune 500, 10 years ago, there were only 11 Chinese companies. Now they are 88. And so those companies are competing for talent in the same way in which they compete for customers. Same thing with demographics. With the aging of the baby boomers, there will be less managers in the right age bracket. And so companies will find a toughest battle for talent. And the pipelines, the final element of the other GDP, is the stock of successors, and pipelines are at the lowest level we've ever seen. I teach every year at Harvard Business School. Every year we do a survey of the incoming class, and we found that the pipelines of future successors is more limited than ever before. So the second message is that these three factors, globalization, demographics, and pipelines, are going to make talent very scarce. What's the solution to this? Again, the solution is not to hire people from each other, even though I've been a search consultant for 3 decades, because this will be at best a zero-sum game. What one company gains by hiring someone, the other company loses. The solution is to become much better at identifying your high potentials so that you can properly retain them, motivate them, and develop them much better and much faster. So those would be, I would say, the three messages. In this volatile world, potential is more important because you need this flexibility, this adaptability, this learning. And in this world where talent will become scarcer, organizations should become much better at identifying and better developing their high potentials.
I want to thank you very much for joining us. Claudio Fernandez Arauz, he is a partner at Egon Zehnder International. He is author of It's Not the How or the What, but the Who, Surrounding Yourself with the Best. And he will, of course, be a guest speaker at the World Business Forum in New York City this October. Find out more at WOBI.com. You're listening to Taking Stock. I'm Pim Fox, my co-host Carol Masser, and this is Bloomberg Radio.
Jeff Bezos wrapping up Amazon.com's entertainment ambitions, buying video service Twitch Interactive for about $1 billion in its biggest acquisition ever. We're talking Amazon. We're talking all things tech. That's coming up on Bloomberg Radio.
Markets, business, and the latest information. This is a Bloomberg Radio Business Flash.
I'm Greg Jarrett from Bloomberg World Headquarters. Stocks rose briefly, sending the S&P above 2,000 for the first time ever as corporate deal-making and prospects for economic stimulus in Europe bolstered confidence in the bull market. Dow Jones Industrial Average finished up 75 points. That is up 0.4% at 17,076. The S&P 500 closed at 1,997, up 9.5 points, or 0.5%. The NASDAQ closed at 4,557, up 18 points, or 0.4%. Stay tuned. You've got more coming up on Taking Stock. Jonathan Levine, CEO of Master and Dynamic on Audiophiles. That's set at 5:20 on Taking Stock. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. I'm Greg Jarrett. Now back to Pam and Carol.
All right. Greg Jarrett, thank you so much. You are listening to Taking Stock on Bloomberg Radio. I'm Carol Masser, my co-host Pim Fox. It is time for the Volatility Index Report brought to you by CBOE, introducing options and futures on the CBOE Short-Term Volatility Index. Based on 9-day expected volatility, short-term VIX can help you capitalize on market events. Learn more at shorttermvix.com. So despite an up day for stocks, we did also see the VIX head higher today. In fact, the VIX up 2% to 11.70, that after 5 days of declines. All right, I was going to start singing because when you got the Queen of Soul, you got to kind of chime in. But I'll see if our Bloomberg West Editor at Large, Corey Johnson, wants to chime in on this one.
I'm the Queen of Soul. You know, I'm a big fan. I don't know a better song than that one. There might be one. I don't know what it is.
Rock steady. Hey, let's start with Hewlett Packard.
Yeah, so really an amazing story unfolding in the Federal District Court here in Northern California, in Oakland, California, about Hewlett Packard and their acquisition of Autonomy. Hewlett Packard in 2011 completed a deal for this software roll-up based in London called Autonomy.
Spent almost $9 billion to
more,
do this.
More than 9
billion.
Oh, was
it billion. More? Okay.
And they,
that's right, they lost $9 billion. Forgive me.
Well, they very quickly figured out that at the very least it was worth $9 billion less than they had paid.
Oops.
And wrote off that amount in addition to what they paid. And because of stock options and stuff, there's different ways to calculate it.
Mm.
But fundamentally, what they bought wasn't there. And Hewlett Packard shareholders really took it on the chin for this. So a number of the shareholders sued. The suit's been unfolding here in Federal District Court here in Northern California. And this kind of amazing, really amazing settlement. Let's imagine, Carol, that mm-hmm. one of us is arrested for pick a crime, Carol.
I don't know.
Pick a crime.
Shoplifting.
Is it me getting arrested or you?
You're getting
No, let's imagine Carol Mass is arrested for, are you going to go shoplifting? You're going to go like a Lindsay Lohan kind of thing?
So not there, but
okay.
I'll work with you on this.
Carol Mass is arrested for shoplifting, let's say a Birkin bag. Let's just say.
That could happen.
So Carol Masser hires some expensive lawyers to get her off of these charges. Let's say it's her third strike.
Okay.
And it's a 20-year sentence. That's what's on the table. So you hire your expensive lawyers. They spend a lot of time in court. You're going to sue the company that the people that busted you, the private security firm, and your lawyers make a deal with the private security firm saying, you know what? Carol, as your lawyers, we've struck a deal. We've struck a settlement. The private security firm is going to pay us $45 million. You just have to do your time. We're done. That's what happened here. Hewlett Packard shareholders, lawyers, struck a deal with Hewlett Packard to say, you know, they're just going to pay us, and then you get nothing.
Crazy.
Thanks. We can move on here. And that's the settlement they proposed before the judge. Big story by the wonderful James Stewart in the New York Times on Saturday really called this out. And it's a topic we're going to get into some more on Bloomberg West a little bit later. But the judge just this morning kicked that deal out and said, that is ridiculous. We're not going to accept that. And unfortunately, the judge's decision is fairly atypical. We've seen deals like this over and over again where everyone's got someone in the court, including the shareholders, but the shareholders don't get representation. So what we might find out is what the Hewlett-Packard's board heard about, what they knew about, and they might have to at least divulge that before they agree to a settlement, even if the shareholders end up getting nothing and the lawyers end up getting that $45 million.
It feels like just one more crazy chapter in this whole story. Like, it just feels like from day one, this has just been bad, and this just feels like one more bad segment, if you will.
And here's why it matters going forward. This isn't just about historical shareholders and historically bad acquisition. Much of the Hewlett-Packard board remains the same today as it was when this acquisition was discovered and when this acquisition was completed. And so you might fault the investment bankers, whom nobody seems to be blaming. You might fault the accounting firm that Deloitte & Touche, which said to Hewlett-Packard, hey, their numbers are good, when very shortly thereafterwards the numbers were found to not be good.
Right.
And but you can also fault the Hewlett-Packard board, which continues to make decisions for the Hewlett-Packard shareholders. And if this board couldn't make a good decision back in 2011, I think it's fair to say,
not going
to
happen
these
now.
The guys, what does it mean for the decisions that they're making right now? It's not reflected in the stock price yet.
Right.
The stock price is going up and to the right gently. But I, to me, it continues to raise questions about the Hewlett-Packard board.
I mean, how much more does this go on for, potentially?
Well, I who knows? I mean, I think that the judge's decision was a little bit surprised. We're going to talk with some legal experts in Bloomberg West in a little bit, in a little over an hour, and talk about that very subject, about what does this mean? Does this signal a new layer of corporate responsibility that we haven't seen? Not just for Hewlett-Packard, but for other companies, and what do they owe their shareholders? And are we going to get to the truth of the matter here? One of the things that Hewlett-Packard's lawyers did in open court this morning, kind of amazingly, is they announced when the judge said, look, what are you going to do about this? You're blaming your auditors. What are you going to do to your auditors? They said, oh, we're going to sue our auditors. We haven't got around to it yet, but Hewlett-Packard said, but now we're going to sue them. So Hewlett-Packard, before they lost this decision this morning, said that they were going to go after the Deloitte and Touche auditors who vouched for Autonomy's books. So now we're going to see another lawsuit there. I think it's going to get pretty interesting. Hewlett-Packard going after Autonomy, now going after the Autonomy auditors of Deloitte and Touche.
They're just pointing their fingers at everybody else. I mean, they, bottom line, didn't they just kind of screw up?
Well,
it's my favorite word today.
They, is it?
Yeah.
Have I missed you saying screw up all day long today?
Well, I said at least once before, but anyway.
On microphone, or is this during the commercial
break? On microphone.
Break? All right. I don't know if we're talking to friends.
Two strikes against me.
Yeah, we already discussed your two strikes problem. Carol's on pins and needles when she's shopping now. The security cameras are
bottom line, HP made a big mistake.
HP made a big mistake. Look, first of all, let's take a lesson, all of us, that when we see a company that's a roll-up, a company that's done lots of acquisitions and is still accounting for those acquisitions, that there are many parties who are no longer at the table who have a stake in the way that results are reported and maybe want a beneficial reporting of revenues, even though those revenues might not be there. But maybe more to the point that when companies are making big acquisitions to justify their strategies, that there's a lot of risk involved, and the board members should have known that.
That's what it comes down to.
Do you remember the firm Gradient, the sell-side research firm based in Phoenix that was sued massively by Overstock when they came out and said that Overstock had some problems, which led to Overstock not stating financials for many years? Gradient was out for over a year talking about big accounting problems with Autonomy and talking about them very publicly.
Right.
So the notion that Hewlett-Packard's board didn't know about this or didn't actually do the due diligence – Do the due diligence to make sure that this business was everything.
That's a crime in itself.
Yes, and they should have been.
No, I meant the do. That was a crime in itself, but that too.
This is when they should be queuing up the Stevie Wonder "Do I Do." Remember that original Music Aquarium Volume 1 with
Paul
Dizzy Gillespie doing
the
solo.
That was a cue for you.
Stevie Wonder, "Do I Do?" Yes. Well, what Hewlett-Packard's board did not do was the due diligence required to see if this merger was everything it should have been.
Right. That's what they're supposed to do before they make an acquisition.
And this matters also for Hewlett-Packard because it's not only are their assets not unlimited. In fact, they have a ton of debt. One of the things Hewlett-Packard's doing right now to make sure they've got some cash flow coming in is selling their obligations. They're factoring their receivables. They're selling the receivables. If one of their vendors owes them, say, $100 million, Hewlett-Packard's taking, let's be making up examples, $90 million now for $100 million owed to them later, rather than sit around and collect that. That's boosting their cash flow right now. But over the long term, their cash flows will be less than if they collected the full amount. And that receivable factoring is something that the sell-side analysts aren't paying attention to. It's a big decision that HP's management and presumably the board is making right now. But they're making those decisions because they don't have the cash because they wasted so much on that Autonomy merger.
What kills me is, who's going to ever ultimately be held responsible? Is it going to be any of the executives? Does anybody go to jail for making a really bad decision that hurts shareholders severely? Probably not.
I am looking out the window right now underneath the Bay Bridge across the San Francisco Bay to
crickets.
The federal courthouse in Oakland, and I hope that someone there is making that decision right now because it matters to a lot of people, not just HP shareholders, but every public shareholder in the future.
And I'm laughing and joking, but I agree with you completely that these are serious issues when these guys are making these decisions, spending billions of dollars, and then reducing shareholder value. You buy a lot. I mean, there has to be some kind of consequences.
And I'm not getting Christmas cards from the HP board right now, I can tell you that.
I bet you're not. God, I don't have much time here.
Well, we got a lot more coming up on Bloomberg West later. Okay. We're going to look into this. We're also going to look into this big acquisition, billion-dollar acquisition
by Amazon
today.
Yeah.
Spending $970 million in cash on something called Twitch TV, which I think most people listening haven't even seen, but it's changing the face of streaming video and broadcasting live video gameplay to 45 million people a month.
Matt Imagine Ryan, that. Our technical director, he knows all about it. He's going to fill me in on it later. Just tell
Excellent.
Me. All right.
Carol, can we talk tomorrow?
Please.
I can't wait.
And no shoplifting. I don't shoplift. I pay for everything.
You'll be paying, that's for sure.
Corey Johnson, thank you so much. Our Bloomberg West editor-at-large. Check out Corey and everybody on Bloomberg West. They're coming your way at 6 p.m. Wall Street time. You are listening to Taking Stock right here on Bloomberg Radio.